This is James from survivalpunk.com. Back with another amazing episode to mount your ear holes. So, yeah. This episode, this will be an interesting one. You probably haven't heard anything like it on the other podcast about survival topics. More than likely. So, it's something that I've been interested in for a long time. More so recently, I've dug into it through some YouTube videos and some audiobooks. Soon to be podcasts that I'm going to listen to about it. But it's an interesting topic. And I think we can have some fun with it. Have a good discussion on it. I'll make sure I post this episode in the Survival Punks Facebook group so we can chat about it. So what are we talking about? The main topic of today's show will be on human extinction events. Scary, right? This is kind of the reason why we're preppers and survivalists. We don't ourselves want to become extinct. That would definitely break the first rule of survival, surviving. So, and I mean, really, does anyone listening to this want to be the last man on Earth or last lady? I doubt it. I think all of for like a week, it would be cool to be the only person on the entire planet. And then after that, you just, just the desolation and the loneliness. Like, humans are a social creature, so no, I don't think, unless you have severe mental problems, you actually want to be alone for eternity. Not many people can pull it off. I don't even think the great author Thoreau would want to do that. So, but before we get into that, there is a phone number. You may call this phone number and leave a voicemail. So far, Matt French has left me several. and I will be getting to those. I'm trying to pull up the number real quick. I'll be getting to those. I'm hoping to get more calls from more listeners. So if you're listening to this and you're a fan of the show, call and leave me a voicemail so I can do a Q&A episode. It's guaranteed. If you call and leave a voicemail, you will be on the Q&A episode. Guaranteed. If your question is dumb, I will probably mock you mercilessly. Otherwise, I'll give it the old college try and answer it as good as I can. The number to call to get on the podcast, and the voicemail is still wrong, I promise I will change it after I record this so it says, thanks for calling James Survival Punk Podcast, instead of this Mentos song. That's awesome, by the way. That's awesome, but probably, I'm sure people call that line, hear that, and they're like, ooh, this is not right at all, and hang up. So the number to call is 615-657-9104. 615-657-9104. I guess at some point in the future, I should get like a toll-free number or a way to send in voicemails internationally, because I would love to have international calls, and I know I have some international listeners. But this is a local to Tennessee number, so calling it could be expensive. With some of the internet voice over IP calling options, it may not be. You may be able to just call it. So if you are an international listener, I'd love for you to call. And if you're not, I'd still love for you to call so that next week I can do a Q&A episode, possibly with my co-host, Couch Potato Mike, who's been couching too hard recently And I literally can't remember the last episode he was on. So that is the number. Please, I'm gonna try to post this over social media to try to get some calls in. Because I really want to do a Q&A episode. They're fun. I want to do one. So there's that. And with that, let's get into the main topic of the show. So, doing my research, I came across, I think, five human extinction events, near extinction events, not full extinction events, unless, you know, you're a Neanderthal, and then you're screwed. Or one of the other early human family tree variants that are all extinct. And there was a few of them. So we're not gonna go into those. And we're not gonna go into the, there are other extinction events that happened probably before humans, and there are a couple other events that we will not cover on this timeline. Such as the Spanish flu of 1912. It really hurt the population, but it wasn't really a near extinction event. Humanity just kept trudging along, as well as, like, the death toll of World War I is ridiculous. It was a meat grinder. But I don't really feel that it super negatively impacted the Earth's population to where, I mean, now there's a ridiculous amount of people on Earth. So, the previous ones really hurt, like, half the population or more in some cases. That, I tend to think, is a near extinction event. Some of these are severe, as in, like, there's only a few left. A few humans left to repopulate the Earth. Like, that's the stuff of science fiction there, but it's real. And it's worth looking into. At the end, I'll tie all this together and make it, you know, make it a teaching point for being a survivalist. And then lessons to learn from these people. But we're just going to sort of briefly talk about the five events that I found, and a little bit of information on them. You could dig in more. The science on a lot of these is contradicting. There are no true contradictions. Something's wrong. Someone's theory is wrong, and someone's theory is right. Choose what you want to believe here. Or the manner in which you want to believe it. And I'll talk about that in a second. So the first event that I was able to find, which, you know, going back 1.2 million years ago, science is a bit sketchy on what we can discover, but there are some definite facts. And scientists calculated for a period of time lasting 1 million years and beginning 1.2 million years ago, when our ancestors were spreading through Africa, Europe, and Asia, there were probably between 18,500 to 26,000, I think they call them breeding pairs, not counting children and whatnot. And they're not really sure. They don't really know what happened. It could have been a cataclysm. There's no proof one way or the other. They don't really know, but something bottlenecked our ancestries. And before that, we had a much larger genetic diversity, whereas afterwards, not so much. So, I guess we really won't talk about that much. And a lot of those, that wasn't purely modern humans. It was Homo sapiens. So it was a few of the other, you know, our cousins on the genetic, you know, the genetic tree. So, and that, I really wish I had a time machine, a TARDIS, to go back and just sort of observe some of these events to see what happened and you know, to see what happened. Was it disease? Was it, you know, comic wise asteroid? You know, what bottlenecked our ancestors? So we don't know. We just know something happened, and you know, it lasted for a very long time. A million years of, like, reduced population. 150,000 years ago, Homo sapiens and the Big Chill. This era is officially called Marine Isotope Stage 6, because that's the because we know its existence in part of analyzing the oxygen isotopes from the deep sea sediment samples. Whatever. And informally called a glacial stage. But it was more likely an ice desert stage. Deserts expanded, as well as much of the world was cold and dry. As well as glaciers, and much of the world was cold and dry. The population on this time shrank to only 600 people. 600 people. The 1.2 million years ago, we were somewhere between 26,000 and, you know, 18,500. This is 600 people. You know, I think I went to school with about that many people. It was a big school. 600 people, there are concerts with more people than that. That's, 600 people. One day in World War II could have wiped out all of the humans on Earth. I mean, more than 600 people died on some days in World War I and II. And it's staggering that with numbers that low, and some of these are cited as being even less, but I think at 600 people, that is the lowest that we've gone in history. You know, 600 people away from they're not being humans. Yeah. So, and I don't have a whole lot on that, you know, the just cycles of the Earth, because the climate is not man-made. It's, you know, there's a lot of things that contribute into the Earth's global temperature. You know, the way that the Earth is tilted, there's all sorts of variables that go into it, you know, and it goes through cycles. Unless things affect these cycles, some things happen here and there. It's not really controllable. We haven't reached a period where we can control the Earth's, you know, weather to that degree. Unless you're a conspiracy theorist and you think that, you know, the government is controlling the weather. So that's 150,000. Let's jump to 70,000 years ago and the Toba explosion. Roughly 70,000 years ago, give or take a few thousand years, an enormous eruption occurred in what is now Sumatra, leaving behind Lake Toba. The eruption coincides with a population bottleneck that is often cited as the reason for the relatively low genetic diversity across the Homo sapiens. Research suggests that as few as 2,000 humans were left alive by the eruption and its after effects. So yeah, that's definitely something worth digging into. So, gigantic. And I mean, in my lifetime of 35 years, we've had some volcanoes explode. I believe Mount St. Helens erupted when I was a baby. And, you know, it was pretty bad. I think it took a lot of people. I think there were warnings, but a lot of people in the nearby towns ignored it, because I remember watching stories of people trying to escape the pyroplastic flow. Some people made it, some people didn't. So, and what other big ones did we have? Not really much of anything. It seems like, at least in my lifetime and recent history, you know, there was what the Iceland volcano threw shit in the air, and it was mildly affected the weather a little bit for a little while. Not much. I mean, you know, when was the last time we really had a volcano that really did a lot of stuff? I mean, was it the 1900s or the 1800s? There was basically an island was wiped out, and the people were able to mostly get off that island. And I wish I had thought about that to take notes, but it definitely appears that we're in a very low volcanic activity period, which always makes me worry, you know, like everything goes in cycles. We can't have a history of pretty active volcanic activity, terrible definition, to one of, it's a weird sort of paradox that, you know, like, it's so unusual that we live in such a calm time on the planet. You know, there's no ice age, there's no massive volcanoes, no earth-shattering, you know, mountain-making earthquakes, no crazy polar shifts, no ice ages, no, you know, no comet hits, no, you know, and it's, is it really that it's just, you know, random, or did we just happen to, because just random circumstances, we had such a peaceful planetary time period that we were able to advance to this point in our civilization? Or we're just, since we're just here to remark on it, we can think about that. You know, earlier civilizations that had a long run may have also thought the same thing, like, oh, it's really peaceful. You know, like, we see evidence that in the past shit happens, but it's not happening now. And then, bam, they're gone. You know, so I'm not going to go deep, and I maybe touch on the fact that probably some ancient civilizations were fairly advanced. Humans have been around. The human race, maybe not in its current form, but humans of some kind, Neanderthals, early humans, you know, we popped up on this planet a few million years ago. And to think that basically we can only make a run to where we're at starting about 4,000 years ago, it seems dumb. I just, you know, if, say, a million years ago we had a high civilization and they had computers, what would be left of that? I mean, It would all crumble to dust and be gone a million times over. So, just saying. So, yeah. Humans wiped down to 2000. I mean, that's insane. It's insane. Yeah, the 600 was less, but once again, we're taken from, and we don't have, I don't know how many humans there were to go down to 2000. Obviously, quite a bit more. Humans, we love to breed. We love it. In a short period of time, we can pop out a lot of babies. We're damn near human rabbits. I mean, come on now. In the 1950s, maybe the population doubled somewhere. Like, our population has doubled a lot. When I was in school, the population was told to be, I think, 6 billion. I believe that's what it was when I was in, you know, like fifth, sixth grade or whatever. the current world population, and I was like, 6 billion, that's a lot. It's, when is it even going to ever, you know, be more than that? And the population right now, according to Professor Google, 7.5. So, yeah, I think, like I said, I think it was 6 billion when I was in, like, elementary school. 6.5 when I was, like, at the end of high school. We've gone up a billion since then. So, and let's see, estimates it to further increase to 11.2 billion by 2100. So, yeah. It's, unless we have one of these events that knocks us back again. So, yeah, I don't know how big the population was beforehand, but obviously it was more than 2,000, and it was probably a big drop. Probably a real big drop. And I'll see if I can find some pictures of this Lake Toba. Lake Toba, yeah, from the explosion. So, my point is, on this one, I would expect sometime in the Earth's future for there to be some massive volcanic activity. You know, we have evidence of massive eruptions throughout recorded history. Some of them, you know, like 70,000 years ago, we had to find reports on it. We know what Mount Vesuvius blew. That massive destroyed a lot of area. We've had a lot of massive eruptions, and it's been a while since we've had one. So, if you lived near a volcano, maybe something to worry about. I don't know if I'd ever want to live that close to a volcano. Although, if Yellowstone blows, even here in Tennessee, there would definitely be some effect. The United States would be putting into a hurt. With that being said, you know, there could be a volcano basically anywhere. Not counting, like, you know, established ones. The Earth could say, fuck it, I'm going to pop magma up here. You know. So you can't worry about that too much. And we'll talk about that in the afterthoughts. That, you know, you can do what you can do, but you can only do so much. I would just say that volcanoes can fuck humans up. They really can. So, we have proof of that. All right, so Let me move away from the mic and take a drink of my coffee. The next one's going to be a fun topic. All right, so this one could be a little controversial. Some of you will probably find it a lot easier to believe than others for various reasons. 12,900 years ago, give or take a little bit. So roughly 12,900 years ago, a massive global cooling kicked in abruptly, along with the end of the line for 35 different mammal species, including mammoth, as well as so-called Clovis culture of prehistoric North America. Various theories have been proposed for the die-off, ranging from the abrupt climate change to overhunting, once humans were let loose on the wilds of North America. But now, nanodiamonds found in the sediments of this time period point to an alternative, a massive explosion or explosions by a fragmentary comet similar to but even larger than the Tunguska event of 1908 in Siberia. Paired with the fact that this layer occurs directly before the extinction of the last 35 of the large mammals, including mammoth, it is strong circumstantial evidence for a cosmic event. Also, so It appears that possibly a comet entered the atmosphere, broke up, hit the North American ice shelf, and a few in Europe. So it's kind of like a shotgun effect there. It just kind of shotgunned and went all over, you know, the northern hemisphere, basically. Before this, we were coming out of the Ice Age. The Ice Age had been going on for a long time. We're starting to warm up. We're starting to come out of it. You know, the weather is starting to be nicer. Not necessarily nice, but nicer. Then this comet or something. There's evidence that maybe there's a comet. Maybe there wasn't. Something happened to take the gradual, you know, spaced out long-term warming to rapidly melt the ice. But then it started to get colder because, more than likely, you know, there is debris in the atmosphere, you know, blocking out the sun, making it dark. Several ancient cultures talk about this, that there was a time of darkness afterwards. And here's the biggie. It melted those ice caps, a lot of them, all over the world, especially the North American ice caps. And you can see there's evidence of massive flooding, the Missoula floodplain, Washington State, to where the ice cap in North America melted and then deluged out. Ice core samples from Antarctica and Greenland show that in one 24-hour period, the oceans rose 20 feet. 20 feet on all the oceans worldwide. You know, that's coastal cities and some islands gone right there, one day. Over, like, I think it was a year period. And, you know, obviously science on this is a little conjectured, but the ice core samples show that it rose 20 feet in, you know, like 24 hours, but then it continued to rise until a peak of the oceans being 400 feet higher. 400 feet higher oceans. You know, New York gone. Just gone. And I think at this point, Tennessee was even under the ocean. You know, so that's getting rid of like a state or two there. That's, you know, and so many early cultures, so many, all have stories of this flood event. You know, the Great Flood, the Bible, Noah and the Flood. That's only one civilization's story, which, you know, would be if you are a diehard true Christian or Jew or Muslim, this is all Old Testament. This is all just should be fact to you. You know, 100% believe that there was a Noah. He built an ark. You know, and there was a flood. Like, finding ice core sample evidence showing that, yes, the oceans rose, the earth was flooded. I mean, as far as you're concerned, that should just be proof. That should just be, yep, that totally happened. A lot of the Native American tribes all had flood stories. All up in other Americas. South America's, they have flood stories. I think, pretty sure the Aboriginals had a flood story. The Christians, the Hebrews, they had their flood story. So all these cultures, they all have this flood story. And I'm sure if I really, really kept looking, I could find, you know, every early civilization had a flood story because it happened. And that was devastating to the earth. I don't have estimates of the people wiped out. Science on this is still fighting each other. I have no idea why. You know, evidence that the flood happened. Absolutely happened. But science still wants to fight it. So fuck you, Neil deGrasse Tyson. And everybody else. I don't understand. So yeah. How do you prep for that? Are you gonna go build an ark? Survival floating pod thing? I don't know. But, and yeah, I wish I had estimates of how many people were left, like what kind of impact that had on the population. I know that it wiped out civilizations. It wiped out a lot of animals that are no longer existed. I mean, obviously, you know, like a lot of the megafauna of North America, we had some crazy, like saber-toothed tigers and all that shit. And, you know, the early theories were mankind is an asshole and he overhunted them. Like, come on. Stop blaming mankind. Like, I'm tired of this guilt trip that people try to put on us. You know, yes, we have kind of done that to some things. Like, we hunted the carrier pigeon to extinction because it tastes good, apparently. Or passenger pigeon. Passenger pigeon? I think so. Whatever. We didn't wipe out like an entire like ton of megafauna, 35 species or whatever. No. This flood was massively destructive to civilizations. I mean, if you follow popular science theory, then 12,900 years ago, we were living in caves and, you know, building mud huts and stuff. I don't quite believe that. There are a lot of interesting pieces of evidence that show that we had pockets of civilization. And I don't even see how that's controversial. You know, like if a flood right now was to take out all of the, if something happened to wipe out the more advanced, you know, first world countries, and just the third world countries are left, which, you know, cover how much of the earth? I mean, how much of the population of the earth is third world compared to first world? You know, if you take out landmass area, like, if you, so much, like, most of Africa, still kind of third world, most of South America, third world, China, India, still kind of third world. So it's, if you had an event that took out just those areas, then, I mean, no, the entire planet has never been advanced all at the same time. There's never been like a universal, different people develop at different points. And I don't necessarily think that that's necessarily wrong, i.e. the Aboriginals of Australia have existed as a coherent culture for at least 60,000 years, if not longer. They think they're one of the oldest cultures on the planet. They think they originate the human species, which throws a monkey wrench in the out of Africa theory that's so proposed and that is sacred and can't be questioned. You can't question it. Everyone's from Africa. But there are some interesting results that maybe back the Aboriginals, where they may actually be a lot older. So it's interesting. Science always contradicts itself, and you should always be open for contradiction. You should always be, I feel as a true skeptic, you should always be trying to bring down the norm instead of bring down the alternative theories. Just me. Where was I going? So, flood definitely happened and maybe wiped out culture, hurting a lot of people. I mean, hurting a lot of people, hurting us because we've lost those records. So, from that, let's move to the modern era. Let's move a lot more modern, much better documented, and well-known. 670 years ago, the bubonic plague. October 1347, when 12 Genoese trading ships docked in the Sicilian port of Messina after a long journey through the Black Sea. The people who gathered on the docks to greet the ships were met with a horrifying surprise. Most of the sailors aboard the ships were dead, and those who are still alive are gravely ill. They were overcome with fever, unable to keep food down, and delirious from pain. Strangest of all, they were covered in mysterious black boils that oozed blood and pus and gave their illness the name the Black Death. The Sicilian authorities hastily ordered the fleet out of the harbor, but it was too late. Over the next 5 years, the mysterious Black Death would kill more than 20 million people in Europe alone, almost one-third the continent's population. That's not counting the damage that it ravaged in China and everywhere else. I think I read the estimates were 50 or 60% of the Earth's population wiped out by this bubonic plague, the Black Plague. So that half is, you know, a massive, massive amount of people gone, you know. By today's standard of the 7.5 million. So like three and a half-ish. We'll call it 4 billion people dead in 5 years. Can you imagine that? Oh, you know, and it would be worse. It would be worse now. If somehow the Black Plague were able to, or a plague of that proportion or more would hit now, it would be way worse. Yes, we have better science. Yes, we have better sanitation and whatnot. But the ancient world of 670 years ago were saved by being ancient. The disease was caught on a ship. You know, ships back then, they pretty slow, not the greatest navigation. I mean, they got where they were going. You know, and then from there, it was basically spread, you know, either through contact of the virus, through, like, you know, the body fluid, the pus, the spit, the, you know, the vomit and whatnot. And it was also airborne. So it was spread person to person, you know. You had to be in some sort of proximity to it. People back then didn't really travel huge distances, you know. It was village to village, and that's the way it was spreading. And transportation back then was slow. People died fairly quickly after contacting the Black Death. They, you know, you'd get it, you'd be sick and incapacitated and dead. You know, you'd travel only a short distance. With modern technology, if someone got it, hopped on a plane, flew across the world, they could spread it to the airport, you know, if someone, there are crosswalks in Japan where a million people cross every light. Think about it. Someone with a bubonic plague could possibly, I mean, even if it was a half of that, you know, you have people crisscrossing the globe, businessmen, business, you know, women, sailors. If we had something that contagious and that deadly, whew, you know, 50% of the population, I think, is a lowball number in this case. It could be, you know, a people wiper out. I mean, wiper outer. Swiper, no swiping. No, it could be, you know, one of these events like before where we were knocked down to infinitesimal amounts of humans left to repopulate the planet yet again. And something that I hadn't really touched on was, you know, even with our current level of technology and science and sophistication, if we're as humans, we're knocked down to even like what, 20,000, 20, 30,000 people spread throughout the world. How many of those people could recreate and keep the technology going even in a small town? You know, like, it's so globally dependent and so complicated. Like, you know, you may be a modern person and very well educated, and you may be an engineer, but without all of our systems, can you go out there and build a TV? I mean, it would be fragments of people with fragments of knowledge that may or may not even be applicable anymore. It just, you know, just couldn't. And there's a lot of people that they couldn't do anything. You know, like these population wiping out events, they're not discriminatory. They kill indiscriminately. You know, whereas, like, here's an example. If any of you've ever watched Use Guys, if any of you guys ever watched the show The Colony, seasons 1 and 2, you will notice what me and Katsuya and Mike used to say. There was a huge discrepancy. Season 1 was OP. It was super overpowered. You know, it was like, the people were like, we have gathered a random population of just people, you know. But they didn't. They didn't. It wasn't like just your Joe Schmoes and everybody's, you know. It was almost the dream team to rebuild society. You know, like a NASA physicist, an engineer, you know, scientist, doctor, nurse, construction worker, you know, all of these professions. That, you know, is like, oh, you know, we kind of need a dream team to rebuild the earth and to survive the apocalypse. Like, who are, like, everyone's seen those Facebook memes where you know, build your dream team and you pick from like Chuck Norris and Mr. T or whatever. It's the same, like, literally. And it was interesting because they showed ideas that average people wouldn't have. They had a better chance of surviving than, you know, idiots would. But, you know, and I really enjoyed that season, even though the whole time I was going, you know what, dude, it's totally overpowered. Like, these people are way too good. Way too good. Then they came out the second season, and I guess they took the criticism. I guess, you know, like, heaven forbid, a production company actually listened to the viewers, took their advice, and were like, let's run with this. They said it's too overpowered. Let's get some ordinary people, like just random, like farm workers and like just factory workers and just random shit, you know, like a more accurate, you know, portrayal of the modern American people. You know, more diversified, more... Not everyone's overpowered. Not everyone has, like, a high-end career. You know, like, if we were to try to, like, repopulate this show with, like, burger flippers and, like, you know, us retail people, then what would it look like then? A disaster. It would be a disaster. You know, like, I'm not saying that people that work at fast food restaurants are idiots. All of them. Some of them are. Some just want extra money. Some, you know, it's just a shit job. And maybe they're John Galt and they're just trying to, you know, not contribute to the system that's going to rob them. But a lot of them are idiots. I mean, it's a good percentage of just fucking idiots. I mean, I always get my drinks fucked up. And it's easy. Well, whatever. Whatever. And the machine's automatic now. As long as you hit the right button, it gives me the right drink. Coke Zero, no ice. Here's your Dr. Pepper, lots of ice. What? What, you dumb fucks? What? Anyway. So, The Colony Season 2. Super underpowered. It was just bumbling idiots. You know, they were hobbling around. They had some good ideas on some things. I'll admit that. But it was a train wreck of a season. And I don't know how it ended because I got so bored I quit watching it. There's definitely something for, you know, and to tie it in, my point was, if one of these events happens, what's to say that we're not left with burger flippers? You know, are they going to rebuild high society or struggle to survive for a long time and restart? I mean, civilization will take thousands of years to get back to where it was. In some cases, tens of thousands of years, you know. Unfortunately. So, there's that, yeah. I mean, if it happened and just all of us preppers and engineers and, like, geniuses were left, you know, if Mother Nature just happened to, you know, discriminately wipe the face of the planet with people leaving a natural gulch, then maybe rebuilding of civilization would be amazing, and we'd progress much further than where we're at. But I wouldn't put my eggs in that basket. Would not do it. And like I said, my point, I had many points in that. My point was that, you know, even having knowledge, I mean, of our current technology isn't going to help a lot of people be able to remotely recreate it. They'll struggle on with the things they have until they start to break down. They'll lose it. Won't be able to fix it and repair it. And then it turns to dust. And you're smashing stones and stuff. So that really was probably the biggest last near extinction event that we had as a species. And like I said, not to say that we haven't done some serious damage and haven't took some blows since the Black Death. There have been, you know, like I said, the Spanish flu of 1912 hurt really bad. The world wars, civil war, wars in general have taken a lot of lives. But nothing has put us really on that brink. You know, and some lists that I looked at, they kind of had things like all of the nuclear near misses during the Cold War. I do not include those on this list because they are not near extinction events. They are hypothetical near extinction events. They, you know, we got lucky because someone didn't push a button and didn't do this and that. But it wasn't, someone did push the button and we had to rebuild from that. You know, it was hypothetical. So, yes, there were several times where we were close to extinction since this event, but only hypothetically. You know, and that's why I don't include those. So, what are some lessons? I mean, to make this from the fun chat we've had about humans nearly dying a lot, you know, like lemmings, basically, you were just struggling through and like dying all the time. To take this from the theoretical, the abstract, this, you know, the fun conversation, and I do indeed hope that you comment on the blog or email me, jamessurvivalpunk.com, or go to Survival Punk's social media so we can actually discuss this. I don't want to just lecture at you like humans are dumb and we die a lot. That's not the point I'm trying to make here. And a lot of these are non anything we can control whatsoever. We're not lemmings. It's more or less that we're on the cliff dancing and partying and having a good time, and the cliff falls off into the ocean and we drown. Not that we jump. Or the ocean comes up over the cliff. So yeah, there are lessons to translate this into a teaching point. The first one is you can't prep for every disaster. Most of us know this. Most of us know this. Some newbies to the prepping survivalist world, they get a little freaked out, and a lot of times they'll pick their disaster. And I hate that. I hate picking your disaster. Unless your disaster is super, super overpowered and you can make a case for it. I.e., when I first got into prepping, the zombie squad forms were my introduction. They broke me into the prepping world, and the zombies for the zombie squad form are not actual zombies. They're not talking about, you know, capping Zed. There are some forums on there that talk about that, but that's fun. It's not real for them, and for the culture there, zombies are a metaphor for disaster. Insert, you know, prepping for disasters, you know, and the mentality, the philosophy was, well, if you're ready for the zombie apocalypse, which is arguably one of the worst possible things that could ever happen, like, you know, just to suspend disbelief here for a moment, if the dead started rising and attacking humans, you're pretty much fucked. You're pretty much fucked, guys. So if you get to the point where you think you're prepared to be able to survive the zombie apocalypse, most other things are pretty much a breeze. I mean, you know, if you've got, oh my God, if you've got cash saved and, you know, barter stuff and food saved and all this, and you lose your job, you know, spending a month job searching when you don't have to worry about bills or food, it's golden. It's damn near vacation time, you know, and you're not stressed and you're not worried about, you know, how do I put food on the table? Well, you're good. You know, how do I meet the bills this month? You're good. You know, you don't have to take the shittiest, worst job you're offered just so you have some money to make. And then, you know, humans, once they're at a shitty job, just tend to stay there until it becomes so unbearably bad that they look for a new job. So when you're able to pick and choose and, you know, take your time and negotiate for the best deal, you're better off. Maybe you'll choose a new career. Maybe you'll take that time to like go to a technical school and get a new trade and get a better job that you will like than you did before. So just saying. You can't prep for every disaster. And some of these, like, you literally can't prep for. If you live in Florida and the ocean's raise 20 feet in 24 hours and continue to raise up to 400 feet. I mean, if you live in a, if you are on the coast, if you're on an island and the water's raised 20 feet overnight, you don't wake up. There's no prepping for that. You know, if you live beneath, if a comet comes down and crushes your house and your entire state or country, there's no prepping for that. If a volcano pops up and blows up your, you know, blows you up, there's no prepping for that. You know, the massive earthquakes, there's no prepping for that. You know, these events obviously are fairly low on the scale of things to occur. I.e., like I said earlier, we've not had most of those events recently. We have had other ones. Tsunamis have killed a lot of people. Hurricanes, you know. A lot of these natural disasters are kind of bad, but I wouldn't say they're not population destroyers. They're bad, though. They're definitely bad. So, don't get obsessed with these things. If you just prep for the things, and I'll get to that right now, actually. The same things we prep for all the time anyway. If you're not directly affected by these, we'll still do you good. You know, if you live outside the immediate destruction area, then having food and water and resources will do you good. You know, if you're not directly affected, then there's really nothing more you need to do. You know, like, I'm a personal believer of having, you know, some cold weather gear. It usually never gets very cold in Tennessee. But if we had a transition back to an ice age, even a slower rapid one, then having some of the cold weather gear would help out. I probably need more, you know. But having some of that will definitely help. It's still, you know, like food and water and you know, gear. Just the basics here, guys. Because, I mean, if you get super obsessed and you're worried about, I don't know, EMP pulse would be bad, comet, asteroid impact, terrible, super flooding, blah, blah, blah. You get obsessed over an event that may or may not ever occur, but if you just prep to prep, then there's no, like, built-in disappointment there. You see what I'm saying? What would make the biggest impact in your survivability of some of these large-scale events? Learning skills and preserving knowledge. I think this is what has helped a lot of the early civilizations that emerged after these massive disruptive events, that some people were able to hold on to the knowledge of the previous civilizations. And that's important, you know, and there are a lot of ways now to preserve knowledge. Some people aren't super fans of, like, Kindles and e-readers or whatnot, especially the ones that have the e-paper that take damn near no energy. Running them off of, like, a solar panel would last you probably years. I mean, years and years. Having those skills, learning them now, so you're able to use them afterwards, so that you don't need to resort to, you know, books and your e-books or whatever. That makes a lot more sense, you know. Yes, having it written down, you can help teach other people, and I'm a big fan of the master you know, the jack of all trades, master of none philosophy, whereas you can be a generalist and pretty good at a lot of things instead of a specialist and great at one thing. I'm a big fan of that. But you can't really learn everything. You can be decent at a lot of things, but, you know, like, I geek out on some first aid stuff and some of the other skills. Just really have never been able to get in a ham radio. I just don't have a desire to. So you can't learn everything. You know, maybe you don't want anything to do with like first aid. Like you bandage an aspirin and call it a day. Like you don't want to suture or, you know, do any of that stuff. Then that's you, you know. Having a basic understanding, good. But you can't really have an in-depth knowledge on everything. So, and if you have backed up resources that teach you how to do that, one, you can resort to that and, you know, follow it like, oh, okay, this is, and you're able to use that knowledge to teach other people that may have, you know, they are more interested in that, where they're like, oh yeah, you know, they need that knowledge that otherwise would be lost. So, and lastly, my last real point on this is to make sure that you always try to stock up on the best items you can afford that will last a long time. A lot of times you will spend a lot more money on something, but if that item is such a high quality that it's a lifetime item, then that's better, you know? Yeah, you can get like a $2 frying pan from, you know, the Dollar Tree or whatever, but it's not going to last. The metal's thin and shitty. It's going to burn up. It's going to rust out. You know, it's shit. Quality cast iron is taken care of, and sometimes, a lot of times when it's not taken care of, will still last forever, if not a long time. I've seen people dig up cast iron, remove the rust, and just keep cooking on it. You know, a lot of times it's just surface rust. As long as there's no pitting and cracking, you're fine. You know, and sometimes you can get that stuff for a really good deal. You know, like, I got my Wagner 8-inch cast iron skillet, which is, you know, like 80 to 100 years old. It's old, for like $11. Great shape. Still great shape. You know, if I had grandkids, I'd be passing it on to them. So, you know, and like I said, you can spend a lot more than that on like a fancy smancy nonstick Teflon skillet. More than $11 is what I'm saying, but it will not last as long and is not as good for you. So always try to factor in longevity when you buy your survival gear. Yeah, you can buy a cheap survival knife, but if it breaks when you need it to not break, then it's not worth it. You know, the better quality gear, like if you had shitty gear and one of these events happened, it's not going to last long. It's not going to serve you. It's not going to, you know, you got to think, if manufacturing was shut down and no new materials can really be built except for what we can make ourselves, and we already discussed that burger flippers will be, you know, prominent and not able to reproduce these technologies, that the quality of gear will probably take a downfall. Availability of stuff, downfall. You're going to want, I mean, and to get over our mentality of, you know, push the bucket out, you know, just think about our current time and let the future generation think about stuff. Like, you got to think, if you buy a $200 knife that'll last generations, you've helped those future generations until manufacturing and all that comes back online and the quality's there again. So yeah, buy the best quality so it doesn't turn to dust. And that's it. That's what I had on this week. It's a bit different. Some of you may think I went out there in a conspiracy land. A lot of it's verified and documenting. You may argue that the flood didn't happen. Science tells you you're wrong. Maybe the method in which the ice melted was not a comet. Maybe it was something else. That doesn't matter. We know that the ice melted rapidly. Ocean levels rose rapidly. This definitely had an effect on the world. It just did. So that's it. And like I said, I definitely want this to open a discussion. So Starpunk.com, you can visit the blog, look at the episode, make a comment on it. You can go to Survival Punk's Facebook group, which is where a lot of good stuff is happening at. Very active group. And comment on there when I post it. So that's it. Hopefully hear from you. Like I said, do give a call so I can have a call-in episode. I would love for that. And there is a Survival Punk Army. It helps support me in doing these shows. You know, just covering the costs of running the website, the email list, all the other stuff that go into keeping a website running on the internet. It's not free. So you help support the show. You get some discounts. You get some free ebooks. You get all of the audio files in zip files. I think I think it needs to be updated now. I think the newest zip file needs to go up. It's easier just download them that way, you know, instead of going through, they're not, you know, I'm not going to charge the episodes, but if you go through the blog, just sort of scrolling through, right click, save as, instead of like, you know, just right click and save as 10 episode zip files. It's just easier. So with that, this is James from StrivalPunk.com. DIY to build an ark, you guys.